You're listening to The Review, first broadcast on the 16th of June, 2012, right here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Review, coming to you live from Studio One here at Midori House on Monocle 24 with Tyler Brûlé and Gillian DeBias.
It's Country Fair Day today here at Midori House, so we'll be crossing over live to the event to hear about what's happening and what there is to look forward to all weekend.
Also, we'll be chatting to Johan Hugo from The Very Best, and who'll be guiding us through some of his musical recommendations.
And we'll be joined in the studio by Spencer Lemon from Union Made Shop in San Francisco, who's brought along some of his favourite magazines.
And there is much, much more to look forward to here on The Review, right here on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to Studio One at Midori House, where today at Monocle we're hosting our very first country fair. And that's our unique global take on a very English tradition. Now, there's lots happening here. So Tyler's actually stepped out of the studio and he's going to share with us what's going on. And he joins us live from our performance space turned fairground right now. Hello, Tyler.
Hi, Gillian. It's actually not even a performance space. Well, hopefully it will be for the next few minutes, but it is certainly a hopping retail and culinary space. Right now, we have a variety of our favorite friends here. As you know, and of course, we've been promoting this for the last 2 weeks. This is our first ever country fair that we're doing, and it involves some of our most favored nations. So we have Colombia, and we have Denmark, and we have Sweden. And we'll be talking about Sweden's culinary contribution in a moment. But then also, we're working with a variety of also favorite brands. So of course, we have our colleagues from upstairs from Wink Creative, our sister creative agency. They've got a stand here. We also have Kitsune. We have Trunk Clothiers. We have henchmen. We've got Daunt Books from around the corner. So there's a whole variety. So I know that we want to get through the show very quickly, Gillian, because you will want to be enjoying the delights.
Totally, totally.
And the one thing that punctuates the room right now, though, are the number of people who are tucking into some very nice. They're Turkish breakfast sandwiches, are they not,
yes.
Mr. Bill Granger?
Yes, I've taken global inspiration.
So tell us what's on the menu this morning.
Okay, we've done some fried egg sandwiches with chili and a homemade peach chutney, some radicchio. We've done a porchetta sandwich with rosemary and some rocket. We've done a classic ricotta hotcakes with honeycomb butter. And one other thing, Vietnamese chicken salad, coconut poached chicken with a shredded salad.
And how's our kitchen working out for you?
Oh, it's brilliant. I wish our restaurant kitchens were that good.
Okay, well, this could become a very, very dangerous habit. It was interesting. Someone said it's raining in Sydney this morning. I know we have a lot of people hopefully there's a lot of people who are listening in Australia as well. Tell us, how's the London experience going so far? Because you've been out in Japan. Of course, you opened your new place in Omotesando recently. But how's life in the UK in Notting Hill?
Oh, life in the UK is wonderful. I mean, what amazes me about, you know, Australia, Japan, London, is not the differences, but actually the similarities. The people, the way people live, the way we all want that moment to sit and have a coffee, read the paper, grab a casual meal. Yeah, that ties it all together.
I want to bring someone else in, and this is a gentleman who I met some time ago, because we could almost have a bit of a bake-off this morning, but Lars Jorgensen cooks at the Swedish Ambassador's Residence, which is just around the corner, and also does a very mean breakfast as well, Bill. But good morning, Lars. Tell us what's on the breakfast table and your mini little embassy that you've set up outside.
It's Swedish cinnamon buns with cardamom and fudge cookies and farmers cookies. It's the Swedish fika. It's a classic Swedish in a nutshell.
So Bill, you've brought in, we've got coffee from All Press this morning, which I've seen, which of course is an Australian favorite, to go with the fika, with the canel bulla, the cardamom bulla as well. Just on the coffee front, is this also part of your venture, or is this part of the extended Australian family?
Yes, no, it's part of the extended family, really. We've got Rob, who's an English boy, and with the All Press coffee, which is a New Zealand brand. So yeah, we bring those worldwide friends together.
Bill Granger, we'll be catching up with you a little later, and of course, if people want to come down, the kitchen is going to be running all day, so which is great. Just Lars, going back to you just very, very quickly, I just wanted to ask you as well, cooking at an embassy or at an ambassador's residence, how much do you think your sort of role is sort of, you know, diplomacy sort of via the dinner plate, and how much are you actually putting Swedish produce in front of the ambassador's guests every day versus also, you know, being able to experiment with other things as well?
I'm trying to keep something pickled, something smoked every time on every dish, and try to keep it with a little Swedish touch. We have a lot of international guests and all that, so I'm just trying to bring forward the Swedish kitchen.
And before you were assigned to work at the ambassador's residence in London, where were you based? Where were you cooking before that?
I was studying at the University of Umeå. It's a culinary arts, so up north in Sweden.
Very good. Lars Jørgensen from the Swedish ambassador's residence. Thanks very much for that. I'm just going to go and just chat to Simon Gander, who is from Muji. You have a stand just across the way. This story actually starts, we were having a meeting at your head office out near Ikebukuro, and I was talking to your colleagues in Tokyo. We said we were going to do this. It's fantastic that you've showed up today. Give us sort of the top five things that are on offer today.
The top five things? Well, the number one for sure is the aroma diffuser that Muji sells, and it's so unique in so much that it doesn't use any heat at all in order to spread the smell around your home. So whereas some people buy candles constantly, this is a completely different thing because it's also a light and it fills a room with an atmosphere as well as just a smell. But the nice thing about Muji is, and I've noticed today you're beautifully modeling one.
Yes, I'm sporting one of your very nice denim aprons.
Exactly. And that's probably one of the best things about Muji, really, is how it sort of fits into people's lives, such as yours right now, in such a simple and easy way.
I know, Julian, you're probably feeling very, very jealous that you don't have an apron, but we can get you one when you come out. Simon Gander from Muji, thanks very much. Just going to go over and talk to Alan Schofield, who's from Honest John's Records here in London. Now, you've got pride of place in the middle of the room. There's a lot of vinyl. Are you only doing vinyl today?
No, we have CDs. We have a 50-50 party, but I think vinyl catches the eye, doesn't it? You know, people, when they walk in a room, sees the records, it sort of draws people over, even if they don't have a record player. It's a kind of, it's got the buzz, it's got the vibes, so we always have our boxes.
So as people flip through the boxes, what would you say, give us sort of two or three picks for summer?
Well, we have our own, as well as being a shop, which is almost 40 years old, we have a label, which is about 10 years old, so we're on to about our 75th release at the moment. We've got some nice new releases. It's a fantastic record by our great friend in Berlin, Moritz von Oswald, which is out today, brand new. You're the first people, well, this is the first place that it's on sale, so come and get it. It's called Fetch, great Berlin techno with a jazzy vibe, very rich music. We've got a couple of boxes of music from Africa, from the Far East, some great Thai funk. That's good summer music, and we've got some reggae, which is always good for if maybe that will bring the sun out. That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Well, I can see behind you, it seems to be brightening up. There was a threat of it was just spitting outside ever so gently, but it looks like it's gone away. Mr. Schofield from Honest, thanks very much for that. We'll see you later. Gillian, I'm going to put my headphones down out here, and I think I'm going to throw back to you, and I will see you back in Studio One in a moment.
Thanks, Tyler. We'll see you back here in a moment. But earlier in the morning, Hugo and our producer Katie had a little wander around to get a sneak preview of the goings-on. So let's have a listen to what they found.
This is the inaugural Monocle Country Summer Fair, which is taking place today and tomorrow in Midori House in the heart of Marylebone. So we're walking into the entrance tunnel here, which Virge Brulé, who is Tyler's mother, obviously has painted this wonderful mural with the Monocle mascots all holding up some bunting and balloons and playing various sort of fair-like games on a tightrope. So we've got Monochan.
Do you want to just describe Monochan for our listeners, Hugo?
Well, Monochan is an owl. He's sort of quite a plump owl with some fairly vacant eyes. I can't really think how else to describe him. I think maybe that paints the best picture. What do you think?
And anyone who comes down to the fair today will learn that Monochan is not just a picture.
No, exactly. Monochan has been incarnated in proper mascot form. There's a giant, probably 6.5-foot costume that has been made in Japan of Monochan, which various members of the Monocle team are going to be taking it in turns to occupy.
I was going to say, one of my favourite emails this week was the email listing who had to get inside the Monochan costume
and the safety precautions of what to do if you fall over as well. So moving forward from the hall, we are now in what was once formerly a car park, is now very much a series of stalls of some of our friends from different embassies and shops. So we've got Portugal, we have Colombia, we have Sweden, we have Denmark, and we have Wales. And all these stalls have different sort of produce that reflects food and craft and design from their various countries.
And I think we should go to the right, Hugo, because there's something rather special over here.
This is what everybody's very excited about. It's being set up at the moment. This is the petting zoo.
So this looks like a kind of cattle pen.
It is. I know, it's soon to be populated by, I think, ducks and pigs and goats. There's some cows as well and some horses.
Cows?
Yeah, there's a unicorn as well.
Should we go and say hello to some of our
Shall
stall
we go
holders?
And say hello? I think the Welsh stall is the one that is at its most finished state. So
Hi,
Nancy,
Hugo.
Hello. You have brought the finest produce from Wales to the Monocle Country Fair.
We have. We're a little collective here from Wales. Hilary Lowe from Damson and Slate.
Hello,
me from Welsh Lavender Limited, Ruby Levant. We're launching our farmer's hand cream today.
So beautiful. And so this is lavender hand cream that is made on your lavender farm.
But we distill the lavender right on our farm, and then it's produced in North Wales with our own lavender oil. It's really refreshing and invigorating for farmers whose hands really need a lot of attention, but really, Hugo, city boys too.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Wales.
You.
That was Hugo McDonald talking to our Nancy Durham and her Welsh pavilion. Lots of fun at the fair. You're listening to The Review on Monocle 24.
In this episode of The Urbanist, there's a double interview with Joe Anderson, the first directly elected mayor for the British city of Liverpool, and Greg Clark, the UK's Minister for Decentralisation and Cities, who, despite being from very different political parties, share a common perspective on urban management. We're also going to be talking to Jay Carson, who's the CEO of the C40, a group of cities uniting to tackle climate change.
The interesting thing about C40 is it is an organisation that was created by cities for cities.
And we'll also be finding out how an app plans to make us better wanderers in our cities.
That's The Urbanist, premiering every Thursday at 1900 hours UK time, right here on Monocle 24.
Welcome back to The Review here on Monocle 24, and I'm pleased to say Tyler's made it back into the studio here at Midori House, where it's now time for our weekly music review.
Yeah, I had to fight my way down the hall just now. There was a lot of people lined up, because as I was saying earlier, our kitchen has completely been transformed, so a lot of people are lining up for Bill's delights. But at the same time, the word is out that there's also some very good Swedish treats also outside as well.
Well, it's so much fun seeing all our favourite people, all our favourite
exactly.
brands in our house.
Yeah, and we also have a Swedish treat in studio as well. Johan Hugo is here from The Very Best, whose new album, MTMTMK, which I had to ask just before we went on air as well. I said, is this really the album? Because oftentimes we fill in our scripts with TKTKTK in caps, which means to be filled later. Anyway, but you can fill us in a little bit. Maybe I need to ask you about the title of the album first.
It's got a real title, but before, when we went to basically to press the record or to our record label with the original name, it was a little bit, they were a bit skeptical if we were allowed to call it that. So basically, it's got a real title, which will be released through competition after the album is out in July, but we're not allowed to disclose the real title until after. I think the label is a little bit scared of it.
Okay, I thought this was maybe just a graphic design exercise. Maybe
yeah,
some,
exactly.
Maybe some rather militant Swedish graphic designers who said, you know, we're going to just sort of stick with this and
make it look nice.
Yeah,
you should think about it. It looks good.
Well, see, it's interesting that you mentioned that there you're creating this mystique, you know, around this, because recently when we were in Japan, we were talking to the pop group M-Flow, and their most recent album as well, they've worked with, you know, a variety of artists. So when they released the album, they didn't say who any of the collaborators were. So then they started this whole conversation, you know, online as to, you know, who were, you know, the seven or eight acts who they worked with. And of course, you know, gradually it sort of leaked out. And then on subsequent CDs, you know, like the second round of the release that will come out, then they will all be named. So it was that sort of the idea to also create a little bit of buzz out in the internet ether?
I don't know. I mean, I would have preferred that you just disclose the name straight away, but because it is a good name. But
okay, don't tempt us.
It's been a working title for the last 2 years, and But, you know, yeah, I like when there's a bit of mystique around things, so I don't mind it, you know?
Mm. So, people wondering. So what is your kind of music? What do you specialize in terms of the music scene from where you are?
Everything. Obviously, the very best is a project with an African singer or a Malawian singer, Esa Mamaya. And so African music is very close to heart for me, but I come from a background of more hip-hop music, and I work with a lot of dance music and pop music and all kinds as a producer outside of the very best. But yeah, so I mean,
and where are you finding that you're finding the talent to produce together? Where are you finding it?
Esa Mamaya from the very best. I found him he was running a junk shop outside my studio in Hackney. And that's how we met.
That simple.
Yeah. He told me he was a drummer, so I invited him to the studio, and he was just like a normal Western drummer, which wasn't really what I was looking for, but he started singing on one of the tracks that I played him, and so, you know, you never know where you're going to meet anyone in life, I guess, especially not as an artist or as a musician. Mm. But, you know, artists come always these days, you know, I bump into people, I hear about people, management, record labels, you know, in many ways.
Should we have a listen? You have something by Flavor with the Sawa Sawa, and it's a remix of, well, you tell us a bit about it afterwards, but this was Noah Baby. And that was the Sawa Sawa remix of Noah Baby here on The Review on Monocle 24. I wanted to tell us a little bit about that, why you selected that as, I'm not saying that we're putting it in any sort of order, but what strikes you about that?
This was a massive hit in Africa last year when we were recording the very best album in Malawi. And same when I went back to Kenya now in February, you know, you go to the smallest village up north in Kenya or to a big club in Nairobi, this is like one of the biggest tracks in the last 5 years. Everybody knows this song. And the title is Na Baby, but in some countries it's called Sawa Sawa. And the Flavor, I think, is originally a Kenyan guy, but it's a Nigerian guy singing it in the video. It's like, but this happens in African music as well. As soon as track goes big, everybody claims it. Mm. You don't really actually know who did the track. But right. It's just, for me, it's just a great song. And it represents my last year of traveling in Africa.
Right, and a nightmare for intellectual property lawyers.
Exactly. Well, nobody claims PRS out there anyway.
No, exactly.
So how, when you say something goes big in Africa, is it on the radio? Are people playing it?
It's on the radio. It's from every car. It's in every kid's mouth. You know, they singing it when they're running around playing. And, you know, like, this is one of these songs, you know, you say Sawa Sawa anywhere and people just start singing it.
Mm. I want to go and listen to the next track, and then we'll come back, because I want to talk about, you've come to London via Linköping and in Sweden, and, yeah. And I want to sort of talk about, you know, maybe the Swedish music scene sort of versus the draw of the UK. But you've chosen something called Honig, or this is by Honig, and it's the track is called For Those Lost at Sea.
Swallowed the sea, and the sea swallows me. The mermaids there will find me dead in a rocket on the seabed. The picture of the stars still in my.
And that was For Those Lost at Sea by Honig. And you're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24 with Tyler Boulay and Gillian DeBias. And we also have Mr. Johan Hugo in the studio as well. So Honig, I would imagine he is Swedish?
No.
He's not?
He's German. And, okay. And you know what? It's funny that we had a conversation before, you know, how do I find artists and stuff? Because this is a guy who contacted me on Facebook, contacted the very best Facebook and sent me this song. And it just blew me away. And I've been listening to it for the last 4 or 5 months, and I just completely love it. He's a German guy, pretty unknown as far as I understand, even in Germany. He's got a record deal, he's got this album coming out at the end of the year that's amazing, and we're trying to do some stuff together, but Yeah, you know, like sometimes these things just kind of pop up and you're surprised that you hear such an amazing song that nobody knows about. And
it was a nice folky curve you threw us there.
Great sound. Where in Germany?
I don't know.
Yeah. Isn't that great now in this world? You can work with people.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
you know.
Before we went to the song, though, I thought maybe it would be Swedish. But I wanted to ask you, so you've been based in London since the early 2000s.
Yes.
And obviously a draw to African sounds, etc. I mean, what has sort of brought you to London? Is there something that creatively feeds you? And I know that, as I mentioned, I guess you're from Linköping, which, you know, I've been through, which is a perfectly lovely place. But maybe it's not the most inspiring place musically.
You know,
if that's fair or unfair.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't actually come to London for music. You know, like when I finished high school, all my friends were older than be living in Amsterdam at that point, and some of them moved back to Sweden. By the time I finished high school, I was itching to do something different. You know, I was working as a photographer, and I had some friends living in London and squatting. So I just packed the bag and went over.
Decided to join them.
Yeah, exactly. And I was here for probably 3 years before. I was making music before that, but that was kind of a 3 years hiatus before I got back into music again, before I kind of got a stable life and a flat. And that's when kind of music came back into my life. So it was just me wanting to do something different originally. And then I fell in love with London and, you know, slowly.
And how important is London for the kind of music you do? Could you do it in any other city, what you do?
I could probably do what I do anywhere now, but at the same time, you know, there's a vibe about London that I find in very few places. And there's an interaction, and, you know, like meeting a singer in a junk shop outside your studio. I think there's very few places in the world where you would do that. So in that sense, London's got a real energy about it that I really, really thrive on.
Mm. I mean, there's probably a certain liberalism. It'd be very hard to sort of find people living in a squat in Stockholm. And,
exactly.
and you know, and in one way, as diverse, I guess, as Sweden has become, it just doesn't have the level of diversity. You probably would not find that junk shop man in Söder.
I don't think so. I mean, you know, Sweden's got an amazing music scene and
sure.
In terms of production, especially for such a small country. But I, you know, after living here for 11 years, I find Sweden a bit small. I wish it wasn't like that. And, you know, like I'm going back in a few weeks and I spend my summers in Sweden normally. You know, I take English artists to a studio in my parents' summer house a lot as well. So I do like working from there. But
Tell us about now your album and what you do, what kind of music and what we're going to be listening to. What we should listen out for.
This is a track called Condaina from the new album, MTMTMK, from the very best. It's some kind of fusion in between Western production and SS, very traditional East African singing. This track has got a guy called Shea on it as well. It's half Kenyan, half Nigerian guy living in London that we're working a lot with. It's hard to explain the very best music, I think. It's a bit all over the place, goes in all directions, but this is quite a happy party track. Condaina, the name of the song, means it's a Malawian voodoo love potion that keeps the men walking in circles in the house so they can't go out and cheat.
All right, well, let's have a listen. Like a stadium band. You ride me through the
bro. I'm down to the wire. But I will. And that was Condaina by the very best here on The Review on Monocle 24. And of course, we're with one member of the group, Johan Hugo. And I guess the very best is going to be doing a little something in London. I mean, you have your first trip coming up to Japan. You'll be performing at Fuji Rock. But what's happening in London this coming week?
Well, it's a bit of a weird one because Essa is not allowed back into the UK since he left.
And this is your Malawian singer.
So yeah, exactly. Sorry. And so we've been trying to find a way of doing a show, basically. So on Tuesday night in Shacklewell Arms in Dalston, we do this one-off live show together with Vice. So we managed to find a way. Yeah, I went to Malawi last week and we filmed this on a green screen. So he's incorporated into the visuals and we built this big band and light show and around it, basically. So it's a free show, free drinks. If you go to just search The Very Best Facebook, you can find all the information on our Facebook for it. So that's our first one that we do in 4 years since SR left.
And then what about, will he be led into Japan?
Yeah, we tour all over the world.
But just UK,
is
part of the UK.
Yeah, yeah. He had a bit of a situation when I met him.
So the home office is not opening its front door to him?
Not yet, no. We were trying to find a way.
Yeah, we know all about that.
Well, that brings us to the end of our little music interlude here. You're listening to The Review on Monocle 24, and it's Country Fair Day today. So after the short break, we're going to be gathering together another one of our guests from the fair, and he's going to be talking us through his favourite magazines. Stay with us.
Nestled into the urban fabric of London, Hong Kong, New York and Tokyo, Monocle shops are small, cosy outposts of everything we care about. That's incredible design, credible provenance, charming service, and of course, intelligent journalism. Stock up on the latest issue of the magazine, browse our carefully curated selection of books and music, or seek out your favourite back issue to fill that gap in your Monocle archive. So, drop in to one of our shops, and our friendly staff will be on hand to show you around. For addresses and opening hours, visit monocle.com.
The Entrepreneurs is Monocle's weekly business briefing, looking at the most inspiring people, places and ideas from around the world. Whether it's a bookshop owner in Toronto with a smart new business model, a fast food entrepreneur taking Japan by storm, or a local bank CEO providing microfinancing in Kenya, our correspondents and editors are on hand to provide insight into self-started success. Each week we'll be talking to enterprising people who have taken the leap and followed their dreams to set out on their own.
This is not just purely a business. This is a lifestyle. It's fun. It's great. I wake up in the morning, every morning, excited about what are these crazy ideas going around in my head.
From branding your company to finding startup financing and surviving the tough times, we cover the full range of what it takes to turn an idea into a thriving business. All told through personal stories from real people finding success by following their ambitions. That's The Entrepreneurs every Wednesday at 1900 UK time right here on Monocle 24.
You're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24 with me, Gillian Tobias, and Tyler Brûlé.
And it's time for our weekly magazine review. Gillian, I've been here for a long time. It's been a very long time since we've been together.
This sort of duo has not been together for quite a while.
So. And it's nice to see you.
Yeah.
You're itching to get back out.
I am itching to get back out. And you know what I love about this fair? You call it a country fair, like an English tradition. But actually, country means, you know, Colombia.
Denmark.
It means Portugal.
Yeah.
It means Sweden. So I got my passport and I'm going to visit all the different.
Well, you've missed some of your boys are very excited. Both Steve Bloomfield and our call trader Robert Bound. They have their well, one has pirate hat and one has looks more like Lord Nelson. So Rob has got the most fantastic commandant's hat on, and so we have a pirate. We have sort of a pirate contest outside. So you have to go and fish for a pirate sailing boat, but then also there's a very large Monocle stealth boat that gets in the way to try to prevent you from actually hooking one of these boats. Mm-hmm. And there's very nice prizes as well.
What I love is the cast of your editors, and we have our design editor Hugo McDonald, who's doing face painting, which
yes.
I think is very
appropriate. My mom is keeping an eye on him. Anyway, I have to say that we are going to go to, of course, my favorite segments. And I should also say as well that if anyone has seen the current issue of the magazine, this whole segment is about to become its own program. So we've talked about it many times, but our magazine review is now going to become its own program called The Stack, which we're doing in association with J. Crew, and it's going to have its premiere in the coming weeks, so keep an eye on our website for that. But anyway, without further ado, we are joined by Spencer Lemon, a gentleman that we met, I would probably say about, was it coming up to what, 3 months ago? 2 months ago?
3 months.
3 months ago?
Yeah,
yeah,
just about.
This is when we were all out in San Francisco for our event that we did with GE, and I'd never been to the store Union Made, where Spencer works as a buyer and also keeps a firm hand on the tiller, keeping an eye on the store. And then we fell in love with San Francisco.
It was so nice because we really, you know, we really were discovering all these little tiny restaurants and shops. And Hugo certainly was sort of waving the flag for San Francisco. But then Tyler and I went out and could test drive some of the places, and Union Made was something he was.
Yeah. And it was funny because then, you know, it was at, it was over dinner, and we said it would be really nice to do an event. And there we were with you. Was it 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. Was it 2 weeks ago?
Or three
no,
weeks?
No,
maybe it was 3 weeks ago.
But we did put it together extremely quickly.
Yeah. Almost as fast as the country fair today.
I think so, yes. There's a lot of nervous ordering of Monocle product.
And yeah.
Now, do you stock magazines in Union Made? Well, I mean, what's the idea behind Union Made? How do you curate it?
So it's primarily a men's retail store. I mean, it's clothing.
But soon to be women's, right?
We're opening a women's store very soon. It's going to be called Mill. Hopefully end of the summer. It'll sort of be a nice counterpart to Union Made. Since sort of day one, we've been having women come in and ask, well, why isn't this store exist for women and so on. So we're doing it. Hopefully that works out. So basically, you know, it's a very like classic American aesthetic. The idea is to carry well-made and hopefully aesthetically timeless goods. But then it's also sort of a one-stop shop because Todd, the owner, and myself sort of, you know, in addition to clothing, we love objects and books and print. And we actually have a very large book and print selection. It takes up a table probably twice as long as this table that we're sitting in front of, and then also has risers underneath it with more books.
Mm. I mean, that was the first thing that struck me when I went in, you know, as much as there's a great array of fantastic clothes and accessories. But it's interesting also, I think a lot of stores that try to bring, especially, you know, fashion retailers who try to bring in print, it's something that they throw on the cash desk. And it's interesting, you really devote serious real estate to it.
We do, yes. Actually, sometimes we actually buy more books than we can showcase, I'm realizing, because...
How rare, that's wonderful.
Right. The other day I was working in the loft office and looked behind me and realized that there was probably 5 titles that weren't on the floor.
Right.
Because we just don't have the space at the moment. So we sort of rotate things in and out. And then the nice thing about carrying, you know, magazines or journals is that you get a new issue every month or every few months, so that keeps it fresh, too.
Do you think that, sorry, Julian, I was just going to say, do you think that's also, when you're running a fashion store, you know, and of course, yeah, some brands, of course, you know, they do deliver, you know, not just, you know, twice a year, but maybe they've got cruise collections and things like that. But, you know, the ability to also have, as you said, you know, journals which are coming out, you know, quarterly or bi-monthly or monthly, does that also then, does it prompt also, your core customers to return just to pick up their favorite titles, do you think?
It definitely does. Yeah. We have a lot of returning customers who actually, I have one guy who comes in and calls ahead of time to buy Monocle.
Fantastic.
He literally calls and he never says who he is on the phone and says that, you know, is the new Monocle in yet?
You see, that's what I was going to ask, is do you find you have a different relationship with your customers having the magazines that you can have a conversation with other than just pure sort of fashion?
We do, definitely. And the nice thing, too, is that San Francisco has a really strong design community, too. So we get a lot of those figures coming in and, you know, maybe they buy some clothing, but they'll also buy a nice stack of books. It's the thing about books and print is it's something that we love a lot, and it's also a really great way that everybody can sort of participate in the store, right? You don't have to buy a shirt necessarily, but you could get a beautiful book or magazine.
And it's interesting as well, is that, of course, you know, San Francisco's got a great design community, but it is one of those other West Coast cities which still has quite a strong core of good independent bookshops as well. So there could be a few better, you know, there could be a few more magazine stores, I think. But do you think that's also part of it as well, as we've seen an erosion, just, you know, fewer places to buy great, yeah, I mean, really, you know, great journals, and whether they're, you know, more commercial or they're more obscure, was that also part of the desire to also add that to the mix just because of quite literally a gap in the market, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what happens at Union Made is that we're filling a lack for ourselves. Mm. You know, it's something that we love and we can't find anywhere, so we'll just bring it in ourselves. And then I think part of what's been really successful about our carrying all of the books in print is that it's a very tightly edited selection. Mm-hmm. You know, everything flows together nicely and everything tells a story, whether that's always apparent to the person who's just walking by the table, I don't know. But I think it makes it easier to navigate a little bit versus, like, there aren't that many newsstands, as you were saying, Tyler, anymore. And maybe part of that, at least in San Francisco, has been that there's, you know, a lot of other stuff to sift through that isn't necessarily that great anymore. Before we
go and talk about the magazines you brought along today, what would you say are your top sellers, though? You know, what's doing well, and maybe from, you know, particularly some things that are maybe more West Coasty or things that perhaps don't hit the coffee tables of everyone who's listening here?
So let's see, top sellers, definitely Apartamento sells incredibly well.
Yeah.
I'm constantly just shocked by how quickly we sell out of that magazine. Monocle, of course, sells very well. Kinfolk, which I know you recently picked up, that has done very well. I think that really does speak to San Francisco in that it's, you know, we have such a strong...
And Kinfolk is from Portland, isn't it? It's from Oregon.
Yeah, I think so. Nathan Williams, the and I believe his wife, he and his wife run it. But then it's very spread out because they have all these contributors from all across the United States.
I haven't seen it.
States.
What's the idea behind Kinfolk?
It's the idea is to focus on food as a communal act. So they're looking at the that relationship of like what food does to bring people together. Which is a really, you know, beautiful and simplistic way to look at food, you know, takes a little bit of the fuss out of it.
And it's a beautiful, it's just, it's on wonderful matte paper and it's a slightly larger trim size, but it's, you know, Spencer was saying it has this, just this really eclectic mix of contributors. And I even saw that they had a story produced in Winnipeg of all places, which also surprised me. But when you sort of look at sort of, you know, the number of, and it is also, I think it's also very cross border. You see a lot of things that are produced in Canada, a lot of things that are done in the United States. And then also, I mean, they tend to jump around the world as well with very, almost like, I can't even think, is there advertising in it?
I don't think so. No. There's not very much.
Yeah,
so I'm not quite sure. Of love.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how they, you know, how they finance it either.
Because
it's
not,
I mean, it's not the lowest cover. What is they probably sell for? $10, $12?
Oh, they're $20.
Oh, they're $20.
What's been really interesting is that as far as top sellers go, it's for some reason the $20 biannual outsells the monthly typically.
Right.
And which always shocks me. It's like $25 for a magazine. I mean, we sell Free and Easy, which I'm sure you're familiar with, Tyler. The Japanese publication that comes out monthly and retails for $25 and you sell those all day long.
It's incredible. And, but I think that's what's happening. And your store is a testimony to that, that there is with good print. And I think as you were referencing as well, you know, there's you know, a lot of stuff to wade through. A lot of it is not particularly good, but that which is good, I mean, people are able to, you know, apply an appropriate margin to it because there's a certain luxury to being able to, as much as people define themselves by wearing a nice engineered garment shirt, you know, as we've always sort of said, you want to associate your, you know, associate with also the great covers that you like. And it's you still can't do that through digital expression.
Right. Yeah. I actually think it's a really exciting time for print, personally. There's so many amazing biannuals and quarterlies that are coming out now that do sort of read as this labor of love. And it is easy to wonder how anybody's sort of making the ends meet. But... in a way, that's almost also adds to the excitement of it is this idea of people just doing it to do it and putting out a really beautiful product.
Mm.
And San Francisco has a sort of tradition with McSweeney's, and now they've put out Lucky Peach. Is there more small publishers like that in San Francisco?
There is. I mean, McSweeney's is definitely the big one, right? Because they have McSweeney's, they have The Believer, which I love The Believer personally. And yeah, I forgot that now they're doing Lucky Peach,
which is the food.
David Chang's.
Yeah, the food magazine.
Thing. Yeah, I actually, thinking about food magazines the other day, I was talking to a friend and feeling like there's actually a bit of a gap in that in food right now. I mean, there's been a gap since Gourmet 108, but that's just me.
I think everyone.
Yeah, no, right. Definitely. Anyway, watch this space. Right. We're looking at that sector of the newsstand very, very closely. Why don't we actually go and talk about some of the things that are sitting on the table? And if you don't mind, because I haven't been in the seat.
I'm going to
start.
Tyler leafing through the
but,
pages.
This has come up a couple of times, and we haven't gone into it very much. I know that you also sell Plant Journal as well, which I imagine probably does quite well. But you know, this is just a celebration of all things green, and a little bit sort of. Like Apartamento as well, it is a social study of all things horticultural and is able to just, you know, obsess about, you know, pieces of bark and it can obsess about, you know, the form of trees. But one story which I love in here, it says the plant shops, and it's about a place called Hivernacle, and it talks about the opening to the story says, at the heart of the city of Barcelona, there is a hidden place where the noise of cars, the bad smells and the stress are replaced by palm trees, cactus, geraniums and quenches. It's Hivernacle, and it oasis in the middle of a city where visitors can walk between plants, flowers, flower pots, and choose the most appropriate plant for their homes with the assistance of the endearing greenhouse's owners. And it's just, and you go through this, and you can just see yourself, you know, there's just a wonderful, you know, image, which they're running as a vertical, in the magazine, of just this wonderful place, you know, as they're saying, at the heart of the city. And you really feel you can sort of immerse yourself in this world.
And they talk about sharing the love of plants. But what's interesting, it's not just through the written word. They really gather up the most amazing photographers. Mm. And I love their recipe page, where it's a recipe, but actually the main attraction is this very almost surreal photograph of ingredients. So they play with photography, I think, really well.
Mm. What have you brought along?
I've brought along a couple of things. That plant journal does remind me of one thing that I love that's just come out recently, somewhat, you know, very similar, is a quarterly called Wilder, which I believe is out of New York. Also focused on all things sort of natural and plants and green. But then they do a lot of stuff on like urban farming, which is really interesting. And
Now we sent you down to Children's Street, to whatever, so you picked up Smith. Is that something that, are you selling Smith in San Francisco?
We're not.
Okay. Yeah. Had you seen it before?
I wasn't familiar with it.
Okay.
So that was a new find.
Right.
Exciting.
For those people who are not familiar with Smith, it's a title which is coming out of Australia. It's a cousin to another women's magazine which we like very very much, and I believe it's from Queensland. It hails from Brisbane, I think. And anyway, which issue do you have there, and what attracted you to it?
Definitely the hand, for one. I mean, it's a very substantial feeling publication, which is something that always speaks to me very strongly.
And the cover?
And the cover is just this nice, simple illustration of a pig. I don't know which issue.
Which doesn't
this
look
is.
Like the live pig, which is probably, if I turn around through this wall, the piggy is only about probably 3 or 4 meters away from me. We have a petting zoo, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening, with very lovely goats, and also a very handsome pig named Nathan. Just in case you're wondering,
Nathan is very cute.
Yeah,
yes. But I'm not familiar with Smith Journal. I just picked it up, you know, maybe 20 minutes ago.
Right,
and probably it will be available on UniMed hopefully sometime soon.
And as you flip through it, what struck you?
So things that jumped out at me are, you know, the production quality is very nice. And then also they're featuring a lot of things that I am already interested in. So there's an article on Aaron Draplin of Draplin Design. He's such a character. I mean, he's always entertaining to read about. He has no shortage of opinions. And then there's a nice feature on Truck, the Japanese furniture company, who I think now everybody has seen how beautiful their work is, and especially their own publications, the three books that they've put out, Truck Works.
Do you sell them?
We don't, no.
No, they're just, every time I go, because somehow when I bring the Truck books back, they get nicked again and again. But it is probably the most extraordinary place. And, you know, oftentimes people talk about Kyoto in Japan, and they talk about Fukuoka, and of course they talk about Tokyo. But you have to venture to the suburbs of Osaka to go to their little world that Kisei-san has created, an amazing, amazing place.
Yeah, I mean, just the atmosphere that they create just in those three books is so sort of enthralling. I mean, I want to go and stay there for 3 months and make furniture, which
you probably could.
I don't know how to do that at all. I'm not.
I still
want to
make
hands.
A film there and on them. I think it'd make a beautiful film.
Yeah, no, it is a remarkable place, and how they've just, you know, again, they've almost like the High Vernacle in Plant Journal, they've gone and just really created their own little colony in the suburbs of Osaka, which is, you know, the restaurant, and then of course having the complete you know, the manufacturing facility. But also when you meet Kisei-san and his wife and their maybe is it one or maybe two kids, but anyway, just, you know, the whole thing is just out of sort of central casting of this new world of the Japanese creative.
Well, and then they have all those pets, too.
Yeah, all the crazy
pets. Which is
pets.
Really amazing.
Yeah, like one angry dog as well.
Angry?
Yeah, it was one dog is not so nice. But anyway.
Oh.
That's
too bad.
But what's interesting about that you picked up Smith and you didn't know it, and of course, you know, I can absolutely see why it would fit into the lineup of magazines at Union Made. Why the move to this matte field? You know, and of course, you know, we have a glossy cover, but we have matte paper. Just, you know, your hunch as to why do you think we've moved to a world of a more tactile paper, especially particularly with so many of these new journals that have come out?
I mean, I would think that a lot of...
You don't have to have a grand theory.
Right. No, I don't. But I think there is something about just the tactile nature of it, right? And there's sort of this negative connotation that's come with the glossy print, right? It's full of ads. There's not really any content there. It feels almost like there's been less love put into it.
Right.
And somehow you can actually convey, maybe you didn't, but you can convey that you put a lot of love into something just by choosing a nice, you know, paper stock.
Yeah, but I think that there is an element of consideration, and certainly people who are dedicated to the cause. And if I think of, Jackie Deacon, who is, of course, our head of production on the magazine, and Richard Spencer Powell, creative director. I mean, everyone really, there's a lot of sort of poring over just books and books of paper. And it is a big act of decision as much as, you know, what photographer Poppy is going to deploy on a story, and what writer are we sending to that story in Africa. But, you know, there's bigger lead times, and there's actually much more cost associated with buying tons and tons of paper. But at the same time, you can really see that there's a lot of thought that goes into it. And if I can just say it, I think that the current issue of our magazine, I think has a record number of paper stocks in it as well.
Really?
Yeah. Of course, Matt and otherwise as well.
I was looking through Smith Journal, which I hadn't seen before, and I love this article called Map Head. And it's about the wild and weird world of geography and all the people who love it. And it's all about maps and geography. So, you know, as well as feeling good, I think it looks like a really good read too.
I'm getting the sign that it's almost time for us to go back out into the wilds of the country fair. Spencer Lemon from Union Made. We're going to have to leave it there. We didn't get through very many. Lots of magazines. We didn't get through a lot.
We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, we will definitely. We'll take the show. You know, we know that we don't need too many excuses to come back out to San Francisco.
Well, thanks, Spencer. Have fun at our fair. You're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24.
Well, it's that time of the year again here at Monocle. Our summer issue has just hit newsstands. Well, almost. I think it's probably being dispatched and posted around the world. And one of the many highlights, of course, is our annual quality of life survey.
And after weeks, if not months, of deliberation, sifting through various statistics and meters, and with a good smattering of our own knowledge and experiences from various cities around the world, we finally reached a decision. And this year it's Zurich that's top of our list, rising up one to the second place from last year. Here's a little taster of why.
On a sunny early summer's day in Zurich, a handful of its residents have made their way to Badi Enge, one of several bathing houses situated along the waterfront, offering decks for sunbathing, bars, and even saunas. The scene is especially notable for taking place minutes from downtown, and it's what sets Zurich immediately apart. This is a city with abundant and interconnected green space, cut through by rivers leading to its lake, all of it set up to be enjoyed by the population. A small, walkable yet thriving place, it's a city that seems to have found a near-perfect balance.
You have a city where you can, in the middle of the city, you can jump in the lake and swim. But you also have best connections to the rest of the world. You have an airport, you have economies, you have high schools that the world known. You have all this good infrastructure of a metropolis with this small size.
Zurich, what I really appreciate about it is you can reach anything in a bike distance, but since it's the biggest city in Switzerland, we have all the theater, culture, banks, and all the benefits from a big city as well. So I often say it's too big to be a small village and too small to be a big city, and this size gives it quite a human scale.
And that was a little taster of our film celebrating Zurich, the winner of our annual Quality of Life survey. And you can watch the whole film in the program's menu at monocle.com. And you can also find our countdown of Monocle's top 25 most livable cities.
And Julian, that brings us to the end of our Saturday review live from the Monocle Country Fair here at Midori House. Time for us to leave Studio One and get back. As a special thanks to our guest, Johan Hugo, and of course, Spencer Lemon of Union Made. And to our friends outside at the fair, our show today was produced by Katie Bilboa, and our studio manager here was Alex Jakes. We're handing back over to Georgina in a moment with the weekend edition right here on Monocle 24. And of course, you can catch up with some of the best clips of the week in Monocle 24 stories, and of course, guests and features on The Curator. And of course, the fun of the fair continues, so we'll be going to be popping out live throughout the day. But for me and Gillian here in Studio One at Midori House, it's goodbye, hoping the sun comes out here in London. Have a good weekend.